today from Colorado and New York City. Welcome to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And John Boehner this week resigned from Congress and as the Speaker of the House, and it has created a lot of speculations as to perhaps the motivations behind it and more conversation perhaps regarding his legacy, his accomplishments in the House. And it will serve as a good discussion for historians down the line. But before John Boehner and before Tip O'Neill and before Carl Albert and John McCormick, one of the earliest speakers of the House in this nation was a politician for whom you've probably heard his name, but probably even more so know even less about him. His name is Henry Clay, and he was the youngest serving Speaker of the House and the only one who ever came to the U.S. Congress as a freshman and was elected Speaker of the House. He has a remarkable history and a remarkable legacy. And finally, there's a great new book out. It's a new release coming out now. It's called Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman. And the author, Harlow Giles Unger, is with us today. And Mr. Unger is one of this show's favorite authors. I have learned more from Mr. Unger and enjoyed more hours of reading than any other author, I think. Mr. Unger, welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show.
Thank you very much. It's always an honor to be on your show.
Well, it's an honor to have you. You've written a number of good books. I've learned so much on Washington and Monroe, John Quincy Adams. It goes on and on, and it's just remarkable. But this Henry Clay kind of snuck up on me. It's a name that you kind of are familiar in history, but the magnitude of his accomplishments are quite remarkable.
The subtitle of my book is Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, and he was indeed our greatest statesman. He was the first great Speaker of the House. He really organized that office and made it into what it was supposed to be in the Constitution. It was supposed to be, and he made it the second most powerful federal office in the land after the president. The president and the Speaker of the House are the only two officials in the government that are elected directly or indirectly by all the people of the United States. The president, of course, you vote directly for the president or for electors in the Electoral College, but the House of Representatives, the representatives are elected by all the people of the United States, by we the people, and they in turn elect the Speaker. He has been called the elect of the elect. And once he's elected Speaker, he is no longer permitted to vote. He's no longer permitted to debate. He is there to organize the House of Representatives, we the people, and engineer compromises that will bring all of the people of the United States, or all their representatives, to unite them in the best interests of the United States of America. Well, it's the John Boehner's term in office as Speaker. He probably will go down as one of the worst speakers in American history. The Cleveland Plain Dealer, the largest newspaper in his home state of Ohio, called him a man who had perfected the art of disagreeing without being disagreeable. And that's the stupidest remark I've ever heard, because that's not the job of the Speaker. The job of the Speaker is to perfect the art of compromising, not disagreeing, of compromising, of uniting Americans behind what is in the best interests of this country. It's very, very difficult to unite the American people. We are a diverse population spread across a huge country. The interests of any given community, the interests of Boulder, Colorado, for example, are not the same as the interests of Miami, Florida. And it would be very difficult for representatives of those two communities to sit in a room and agree on what's best for their country.
Well, you mentioned to compromise and to be an effective legislature. That's really the role of the Speaker of the House. And what was remarkable, and you wrote about this in the book, because we talk about the divisiveness today, but your book really talked about the House of Representatives back in around 1811, and it says, in contrast to the quiet solemnity and decorum of the Senate, lunacy gripped the House. And then you went on to talk about the membership conduct and you bringing their dogs on the floor. Can you just describe the atmosphere of the House at that time?
Well, it was the Wild West. The House of Representatives, remember, had members from across the country. Most of the country was farmland and frontier land, so you had members who were hunters. They were representative of the American people at that time. Most Americans carried guns, and just about everybody in the House carried a gun. Derringer, the gunmaker in Philadelphia, had invented this little pistol that you could put in your pocket with one shot, and everyone in Congress had one. They fought duels together. They actually had fist fights on the floor and knocked down, drag out fights where they fell to the floor, pummeling each other, until Henry Clay came along. And Henry Clay saw this as anarchy, and he had a dream very similar to the dream of the future, at that time, future President James Monroe, who was then Secretary of State. They dreamed of a vast empire here in the United States, stretching from sea to shining sea, becoming the most prosperous land in the world. But it required compromise and union. Henry Clay described his philosophy by saying, quite simply, if anyone desires to know the leading and paramount object of my public life, the preservation of the Union will furnish him the key. Now, when he went in, aside from individual fights between congressmen, you had this huge split between North and South, the slave states of the South and the free states of the North. And they were ready to split at any time. Fortunately, there was an even balance in the Congress. They had equal votes. The one couldn't vote down the other, and the other couldn't vote. So they learned to live together in relative peace in the House of Representatives. Northerners didn't butt into the Southerners' way of life and vice versa. Until 1820, or 1819, when Missouri applied for statehood, it would come in as a slave state, and it would have thrown the balance of power in the Congress to the slave states, who then would have voted to make slavery the law of the land across the United States. The Northerners were not going to have any of that, and they said that, well, they'd split, they'd leave the Union. And Henry Clay wasn't going to have that. He knew that if the Union split up at that time, no one would have cared. There would have been no Civil War. Northerners had as many slaves as almost as many slaves as the Southerners. Slavery was illegal in New England, but legal in every other state of the North and the Central states. So they would not have gone to war had the South seceded. But secession and the division of the states would have put the American Revolution into the trash can of history. It would have left this nation divided into two, maybe three, relatively infinite little nations, and the great world powers, Spain, France, and England, would have marched right in and taken us over. The United States would have disappeared. So Clay fought to preserve the Union, and he was called the Great Compromiser because he developed schemes that brought enemies and foes together in the House. He knew that little tiny Maine, which was part of Massachusetts, was interested in becoming a state. He brought them in as a free state. So he tied the annexation of Maine to the annexation of Missouri. They both came in with no strings attached, and it kept the balance of power even in the Congress. Although they didn't like each other, they remained in the Union. Henry Clay saved the Union, and he did this over 40 years with many compromises, but five great compromises comparable to the Missouri Compromise. And he did it with 10 different presidents. Boehner couldn't work well with one president. Clay worked with 10 different presidents, many of them bitter political foes. And by saving the nation over 40 years, by keeping it together, by preserving the Union, he allowed the institution of a scheme he developed called the American System. It's probably the greatest economic and social scheme in world history, certainly in American history. It tied 20 northern, central, midwestern, and western states in a network of roads, canals, and later railroads, a network that allowed Americans to travel freely back and forth across state lines. It allowed them to expand their businesses across state lines so that farmers and merchants across the country had sources of supply in one state, did business in another state, sold their goods in still more states. The people who moved traveled back and forth to visit their relatives where they used to live and vice versa. Over those 40 years, two new generations came to life in the United States, and they became, thanks to Clay's American System, they became Americans. In 1820, if you asked somebody, what country did you come from? The answer would be Virginia, Massachusetts, Ohio. Two generations later, in 1860, just before the Civil War broke out, if you asked anyone in 20 states stretching from California to Maine the name of their country, they would say, I'm an American. They were, and they were not about to see their union, Henry Clay's union, broken apart by a few plantation owners in the southern states.
Well,
there were 20 million people in the Union, only 5.5 million people in the southern states, and many of them were slaves.
Well, we're going to talk more about this compromise and also the American system because it's integral to understanding Henry Clay and also fitting his legacy into American history. But first, we got a break for a quick commercial. We're talking with Harlow Giles Unger, a thrill to have him back on the show, and we're talking about his new book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, and you're listening to him here on The Tim Danny Show. We'll be right back. Preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate, we learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today, coffeepartyusa.com. Our government should be open, it must be accountable to the people, and we demand access to vote and our votes be counted and verified. These concepts should be common sense in our democracy, but they're not. Some would deny us these rights, but people died for them, and Common Cause works every day to make certain they did not die in vain. Join Common Cause. Keep your rights and hold political power accountable where it should be, the people. CommonCause.org, holding power accountable. Welcome back to the Tim Danny Show here at Danahy.com, and it's such a thrill to be talking with Harlow Giles Unger about his new book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman. And we've talked about Henry Clay and his 40 years in the Congress and the Senate. He was Secretary of State for a while, served 10 presidents, kind of defined the power structure in the U.S. House of Representatives, as stated by the Constitution. It's an incredible story and an often overlooked aspect of compromise, conciliation, and truthfully management in a very, very divisive time in American history. And Mr. Unger, we talk about the compromise. We mentioned you mentioned briefly the five compromises. Most notably, I guess, in history is the Missouri Compromise. But your appendix, I've never seen a subject of a book have an appendix of compromises, which I found to be fascinating. You mentioned the tariff and nullification crisis of 1833, the Texas annexation crisis, the Compromise of 1850. This really does point out how you quoted Abraham Lincoln during Henry Clay's, after Henry Clay had died. He said, he knew no North, he knew no South, he knew nothing but his country. These compromises are really evidence of that, aren't they?
Exactly. And that's what Americans today are so ignorant, seem so ignorant about what the House of Representatives is all about. And even the members of the House seem to be ignorant about what the House is all about. The House, you know, as I said before, we are a diverse people. It's impossible for all of us to agree. And in the course of American history, in the 225 years since the first Congress met, only 5% of the laws that were proposed in Congress were actually passed, were actually enacted into law. Only 5%. It is not, you know, that is not dysfunction. Americans think that is dysfunctional. But if you probe a little bit, you'll find that Congress is only dysfunctional when it doesn't do what I want it to do. When it does what I want it to do, then it's fine. But that's not what Congress is about. Congress is about what's best for all of us. Congress is about compromise. The 5% of laws that were passed to benefit the most Americans and hurt the fewest Americans possible. That little block in Congress of extreme Tea Party people, there are 20 of them, who are threatening to close down Congress if they don't get their way. Those are not, they don't believe in our system. They believe in Nazism or communism, because that's not what Congress is supposed to be like. Congress is supposed to be a body that prepares the best for the most people in the country, and no one can hold up Congress. No one has the right to hold up Congress. That's what Henry Clay started. That's the kind of House of Representatives he created, and the ones we've had really ever since until just a few years ago. Over the years, we've had some great people who realize their job in leading America is to unite us all. We had Washington, of course, Lincoln, Roosevelt, Eisenhower, and the greatest statesman of this group of people who united us really was Henry Clay, who saved the nation. He made us a nation strong enough that we could withstand the horrors of the Civil War. A few political hacks and plantation owners in the South wanted to retain power and didn't care about the rest of the nation, so they were willing to risk all and go to war. Well, and that's what this group of people who are holding the Congress hostage right now seem to be willing to do. These are not people who believe in the Union and believe in our way. This is, we have a democracy. Well, and the democracy is to work in the best interests of the entire nation, not of a small group.
Well, that's what I find so fascinating about all of your books and in this one, because you know there's different divides in American history. You know, we can say slavery versus abolitionists, we can say North and South, and even now there's perhaps a political divide between conservative and liberal. And what was interesting in your book, and I suppose, you know, we do need to talk about the American system that Henry Clay designed, but which was the development of roads and networks and really kind of allowing the economic and social expansion of the nation. But Mr. Unger, your book was so interesting because it kind of gave the South's power brokers reasons to oppose this system, and it sounded so similar today. Can you kind of describe the fiefdoms of the South's leaders and how they opposed the American system and its concept?
Quite simply, dependent on slave labor, and they were able to produce cotton at that time cheaper than anyone else in the world. They shipped their cheap cotton to English textile manufacturers, who in turn produced the cheapest textiles in the world, and dumped them on the American market, threatening the entire textile industry in the North. So the North imposed high tariffs on the British textile imports, which in turn meant a cutback in their purchases of Southern cotton. The Southerners, again, were ready to secede. And again, Clay stepped into the picture and calmed everybody down and saw the arguments on both sides, but said, "We are all Americans. We all have a right to survive. Let's look at these tariffs, and let's find a reasonable way to preserve the cotton industry in the South and the textile industry in the North." He said, "Let's take the tariffs and reduce them slightly over 10 years, say 10% a year. That won't allow the South to dump cotton textiles into the North, and it won't put the Southern cotton industry out of business. Everybody will have a chance to adapt little by little over a 10-year period and find ways for their industries to survive." And that's exactly what happened. That was one of the compromises of the great compromises of Henry Clay. It was called the Compromise of 1833. But as I say, what it did was to hold the Union together. And that was his primary goal throughout his life. And he inculcated others with that goal. James Monroe was one of the people who learned from Henry Clay, and most importantly, Abraham Lincoln. Most people don't realize that Abraham Lincoln's wife, Mary Todd, and her family, but Mary Todd grew up almost next door to Henry Clay in Lexington, Kentucky, and when Abraham Lincoln wooed Mary Todd, the young Abraham Lincoln wooed Mary Todd, learned a great, he became Henry Clay's protege. Henry Clay taught him a great deal about politics and compromise, and when Lincoln went into Congress, he learned even more about compromise. Lincoln called him my teacher and mentor, called Clay my teacher and my mentor. And when the war began, when the Civil War began, Henry Clay had died, and Abraham Lincoln really cited Henry Clay's words in explaining why he had gone to war. He said, "I can express all my views by quoting Henry Clay." He said that if I could say my reasons for going to war, where if I could, were to save the Union. If I could save the Union by doing nothing about slavery, I would do nothing about slavery. If I could save the Union by freeing all the slaves, I would free all the slaves. And if I could save the Union by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save this Union. And what I don't do, what I forbear because I do not believe it would help to save this Union. That's what Abraham Lincoln had learned from Henry Clay. Whatever he did as president, he did to save the Union. And whatever Henry Clay did in Congress over 50 years was to save the Union. The preservation of the Union was the paramount object of my public life, Henry Clay said.
Well, there was a cost to his compromise, too, and I need to break for our last commercial, and then we'll talk about the political cost of compromise for Henry Clay. We're talking with Harlow Giles Unger. We're talking about his great new book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, and you're listening to him here on the Tim Danahy Show. We'll be right back. Welcome to this edition of the Tim Danahy Show's American History Minutes here at Danahy.com. During the American Revolution in 1778, the Iroquois nation sided with the British forces. George Washington knew Americans were vulnerable to attacks from northern Pennsylvania, so he instructed General John Sullivan to lead a campaign to destroy Iroquois crops and villages north of eastern Pennsylvania. However, the American army needed the help of the Lenape Indians in order to find the Iroquois, traverse the territory, and avoid ambush. So Washington and Sullivan invited the Lenapes to join the American independence movement and offered the Lenape Indians territory to be the 14th state and give them representation in Congress. The Lenape accepted the offer and fulfilled their side of the bargain, but the United States did not honor the treaty signed in Pittsburgh. This prompted one Lenape chief to say, "We've heard many promises that should be given no more notice than the chirping of birds in the woods." If promises were kept, the Lenape Nation, not Vermont, would have been America's 14th state. This story has been brought to you by The Tim Danahy Show. Like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show. Follow us on Twitter at Tim Danahy Show. Or sign up and listen here at Danahy.com. Teddy Roosevelt said, "Of all forms of tyranny, the least attractive and the most vulgar is the tyranny of mere wealth." This is why antitrust law and competition is essential to America's economic health. This is why the Organization for Competitive Markets works to reclaim competition for farmers, ranchers, and rural communities across America. We believe our duty is to advocate a just role for government in the agricultural economy, an enforcer of rules necessary for markets that are fair, honest, and accessible. The Organization for Competitive Markets. Learn more at competitivemarkets.com. Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're talking with Harlow Giles Unger, one of the show's favorite authors, and we're talking about his new book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman. And we've talked about the great compromises. We've talked about his American system and how he sought to benefit all Americans and how he negotiated and brought together diverse viewpoints and powerful personalities. John Calhoun comes to mind, Andrew Jackson, Daniel Webster, the just incredible figures from American history, how he brought them together to achieve legislation to keep this nation together and growing. But Mr. Unger, it had a political cost. He ran for president or contemplated running for president 3, 4, perhaps even more times than that. And because he compromised, he seemed to have caught the disfavor of more opinionated people, and it ultimately cost him a shot at the presidency.
Exactly. That's the problem with compromise. No one is entirely happy. The only thing that compromise really achieves, well, not the only thing, the great thing that compromise has achieved, is to keep everybody together in the same room. But that doesn't mean they like each other, and that doesn't mean they're happy with the compromise. A compromise gives a little bit to everybody and not much to anybody. So those who wanted big things are usually disappointed. And a bit angry at the person who arranged the compromise. And in this case, that meant Henry Clay, who was known, called by newspapers and American people, the great compromiser. And his great compromises left a lot of people somewhat unhappy. But again, that's democracy. that's pure democracy. Alexander Hamilton said, if you want an efficient government to do exactly what you want, get yourself a dictator. Otherwise, embrace the system we have and stop trying to pull it apart, because if you pull it apart, you will have a dictator, and you're certainly not going to be happy then. You may be happy at the beginning if he's your man, but you won't be happy for long. The intent of the framers of the Constitution, James Madison explained what they intended when they created the House of Representatives. And these are James Madison's words: not the rich more than the poor, not the learned more than the ignorant, not the haughty heirs of distinguished names more than the humble sons of obscurity and unpropitious fortune. The electors are to be the great body of the people of the United States. That's what James Madison said, and that's what Henry Clay fought for all his life, and held them together, held the people of the United States together in union. And we owe that union today, originally to Henry Clay, of course, and he made the union strong enough so that it could survive and survive the Civil War and remain intact after that disastrous history in America, well, American history.
And John F. Kennedy, I believe it was in his book Profiles of Courage in 1957, if I'm not mistaken, but he cited Henry Clay, despite, you know, Americans' unawareness of his role in American history. John F. Kennedy cited him as being one of the five greatest senators of all time also, correct?
Yes, indeed. And he certainly deserves to be called that. The tragedy we face today is that we seem to have no one, no statesman trying to step into leadership roles in this country. We need statesmen. We need the next speaker. Let us just pray that the Congress will elect a speaker who will do what Henry Clay did and help save and preserve our union, instead of trying to divide us.
Well, an extraordinary book and an extraordinary man. Again, the book's title is Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman. It's published by DeCapo Press, and you see their books all over the place. If you at your local bookstores, you see them at Barnes & Noble. You know, support your bookstores, and I guarantee you'll see this book there, too. So, Harlow Giles Unger, Mr. Unger, I want to thank you again for coming on the show, and I'm hoping I can talk with you just for a second off air as once we close.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always a privilege to be with you and to talk to your listeners.
Well, the honor is all ours. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening to the Tim Danahy Show. We'll be back.